Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today, since it's Monday, we have our winners and losers from the Serie A weekend. And wouldn't be Calcio Land without questions from our listeners that came in via Twitter. And we are going to spend a good amount of time talking about Juve today. And the reason we're doing this is because of their huge lead in Serie A, the fact that they're out of the Coppa Italia. There's a pretty decent chance that this week will be the last time we'll actually have something really relevant to talk about Juve, at least pitch-wise, because of the match coming up against Atletico Madrid. So at the end of the podcast, you're going to hear an interview I did with Elio Salerno. Usually for Juve, we have our friend Adam Digby or Maurizio from around Turin. We've had Rob from Juve FC. But if you guys remember a few weeks ago, I asked you guys on Twitter about some up-and-coming writers, podcasters that you think deserve the platform. And Adio was a name that came up multiple times. So we look forward to chatting. You'll hear that interview at the end. But before we get to that, I'm joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, a few days ago, I posted a poll on our Calcio Land Twitter account asking people who has more at stake tomorrow. We're recording this on Monday when Juve faces Atletico Madrid. And I asked, is it Allegri? Is it Juventus as a whole? Is it Cristiano Ronaldo? And I think of all the polls we've done, this was the tightest. The results were really right there for all of them. I also wrote about this for Euro Fantasy Game yesterday. But I'm curious to get your perspective, Alex. Who do you think is going to look worse if Juve can't come back against Atletico tomorrow? Who has more at stake, in your opinion?
It's a really good question, David, and I'm still thinking about it here, answering it right now. I definitely think Juventus has something at stake, obviously, their Champions League hopes. But you know, we both know the narrative. If Juventus crash out of the Champions League here, that people will just say, yeah, maybe they can only win Serie A. They just can't hang, or they just can't win the Champions League. And I think that obviously is rubbish, because they can certainly hang in the Champions League. They just haven't won it in this big reign they've had. But, you know, I wouldn't say they have the most at stake out of these three, although I'm sure if you're a Juve fan, it might feel like that. With Ronaldo, that's an interesting angle. Now, I definitely can't say he has the most at stake, because I'd be a little bit of a hypocrite, because I remember when Ronaldo came to Juve, I said either the first episode we had after that, or maybe the second episode we had after that, that if he somehow propelled Juventus to win the Champions League after winning it just over and over and over with Real Madrid, that I might have to regard him as the best, as the GOAT, despite me obviously thinking Messi is the GOAT right now. So if Juve got knocked out by Atletico, that would be awfully reactionary, in my opinion, to then say, well, Ronaldo had the most at stake. It could have the biggest negative implication on Ronaldo. I just don't think that would be true. He has had a good season. I don't think it's like he's gone to Serie A and he's been exposed, nothing of the such. So I think by default, but also probably justified, I'm going to say Allegri has the most at stake. And like I said on the previous episode, I'm not sure it's all fair. I'm really not sure it's all fair because of the standard he has set for Juve, for the standard Juve have set for themselves. But as we know, David, the manager is the first one to take the fall. And even though they're just such a dominant team in Serie A, Juve, Allegri, they just might decide this is now time to maybe switch things up. Maybe they think they can win the Scudetto with really any manager, but they want to figure out the best manager to get them to the Champions League title. I think Allegri is a pretty good one, but I would say if Juve were to lose against Atletico and be out of the Champions League, that would probably have the biggest negative implication on Allegri, in my opinion. So that's my take, David. What about you?
I have to say I'm still undecided. I'm going to make kind of the case quickly for all three, and maybe I'm going to talk myself into one or the other. I think for Allegri, I think for within the Juve bubble, obviously, if Juve goes out, especially with all the complaints on, you know, how boring his style of play is, and how defensive it is. And look, a lot of times you could chalk up, you know, poor performances at the beginning of the season by saying, well, Allegri's teams are all about peaking in March. And we have seen that in a lot of cases. Allegri's teams, and this is even before Juve, tend to be second half teams. And, you know, maybe he's doing the bare minimum so his team is fresh and he can unleash something new when it matters most. And we have seen him in years past unleash different formations towards this time of the year. So I feel if Juve goes out within the Juve bubble, he's going to get a lot of blame. And look, I think in the first leg, if you want to criticize him for that, that's very well deserved. I thought he got really outmanaged there. Granted, it was Atletico, a really good team in Europe. They had won the Europa League, Simeone and all. I get all that. So I think within the Juve bubble, Allegri, and maybe in a lot, I would say maybe Allegri has the most to gain by passing this round. I think he'd be redeemed in the eyes of a lot of people, but he would, within the Juve bubble, if they go out, he's going to be the one that's going to be held the most responsible. But I will say outside the Juve bubble, I think Allegri, and I would say let's put him even outside of all Serie A, because I know there's a lot of Milan fans that don't like him. I think he's rightfully rated very highly. If this is his last season at Juve, and look, to me, maybe it's time to go regardless of what happens in this round and later on. I think he's going to be fine. He's going to definitely land on his feet. I think Allegri, he's really proven that he is a manager for a huge club. And I really mean the top, top ones. We saw what he did. He continued what Conte did, took the team from B to C, which I really wouldn't underestimate. We've seen that people trying to take over after Ferguson, after Mourinho at Inter. It's not really that easy thing to do. I think Allegri has shown that he's very good at managing locker rooms and star players. I think the fact that Bonucci, who clashed with him, wanted to come back to Juve speaks volumes. I think the way he's handled Dybala, his behavior, maybe not integrating him on the team with Ronaldo, but with his disciplinary action, I think Allegri has shown that he's a great manager for a top team. And I think he's the master dealing with the media, saying the right things at the right time. I will say if this is it for him at Juve and in Serie A, at least for a little while, I'll miss not transcribing his press conferences. So I think outside the Juve bubble, he lands on his feet just fine. People that aren't Juve fans will say, well, hey, you know, he lost against Atletico. They're a really good team. Simeone knows what he's doing. Now, Juve, I think you can make a really strong case for Juve being the one that has the most at stake, because when they acquired Ronaldo, this was the first time that they really said, okay, you know what? We are going all in for the Champions League. That was really the acquisition to make that happen. He was a player that took him out in the Champions League. You know, arguably the greatest player in the competition's history. He was exactly the type of player to bring in to make it happen. Now, the problem is, you know, they also invested a ton in Ronaldo, who did turn 34. You can make a case, you know, although he's in great shape, he has a multi-year deals. In the last years of the deals, it's safe to say that he'll likely be on the decline. And you also look at the landscape of this Champions League. Real Madrid and PSG are out. One between Bayern and Liverpool are out, are going to be out after this round. I mean, it's hard to imagine Juve having maybe an easier road to the Champions League and with a Ronaldo who's still performing at peak. The other thing, too, is if Juve goes out in this round, this is going to hurt their revenues. One area where they can make a lot of money is with a deep Champions League run that really elevated them the two times they made the finals. That's when they were able to start to really move the needle and what they could spend. So I think they have a lot at stake. I'm going to say they have the most at stake out of this. Now, I also had a lot of reactions, and I wasn't surprised that people, and more Ronaldo fans than, say, Juve fans, saying, what are you even putting him in the poll for? What does he have to prove? He's won 5 Champions League, and look, Real Madrid has done poorly without him. I definitely respect that. But I think, as you said, for Ronaldo, what's at stake is really a huge missed opportunity. I'm not going to go as far as you as saying that if he wins the Champions League for Juve, he's the greatest player. I mean, I don't like in general to talk about in those terms, but I think certainly it would go massively towards helping his reputation historically and his debate against Messi, especially a club like Juve that has struggled in the Champions League and is really known mainly for losing finals and disappointments. Now, granted, Ronaldo can still do it at Juve. He has a multi-year deal, but this, because of the landscape of the competition and his age, is his best chance. So people that are saying Ronaldo has nothing at stake, I disagree. It's a real huge squandered opportunity. And, you know, if you're in the Juve bubble, and I follow a lot of Juve fans, just like I do other teams, just because I really want to see kind of what fans are thinking, there's already talk that maybe the Ronaldo deal wasn't worth it, especially if they go out. You know, what if bringing in Ronaldo costs them Dybala in the summer because they don't think they can fit together, or maybe they need the revenue from the Champions League and whatnot. And please, Daily Star, don't write that I'm saying Dybala is leaving. I'm just saying that's the kind of talk that there is surrounding Ronaldo right now with Juve fans. So people are saying maybe this wasn't worth it. And I think if they go out tomorrow, that is only going to intensify. So I think this is really a fascinating topic. We wanted to cover a lot of Juve, and definitely check out the interview at the end of the podcast, because again, to their season, and they're victims of their own success in Serie A, the lead is so humongous that we might not talk that much about them moving forward, at least on the pitch.
Yeah, it's a very interesting discussion. And honestly, when I saw it in the outline, I kept changing my mind. And even when giving the answer, I kept changing my mind. But David, we are at Monday. We always do winners and losers after a nice weekend of Serie A, and I certainly don't peek at your winners and losers. But I got to say, we had a question in the Twitter question segment last episode asking about me and Milan and if I'm ever going to commit to them. Another really nice win for Milan. I'm getting closer. But without further ado, David, who are winners and losers? Episode 202 of the Calcialand podcast.
So we're going to continue the theme of Juve only because they played on Friday. We had Moise Kean, born in 2000, scored 2 goals, created a penalty. I know there's a lot of people that were upset he didn't take the penalty to go for the hat trick. Really put in a very strong performance. I know it was Udinese, but still well done by him. I think he's really a fascinating player because, look, we know Juve doesn't really play that many young players that often, and they are about the star power now, especially. But when you look at the age of the Juve strikers, except for Dybala, you look at Ronaldo, you look at Mandzukic, he's a really interesting player. And the other thing is his agent is Mino Raiola. And who your agent is really matters with these sorts of things. And Raiola and Juve has a great relationship. Of course, you know about Pogba. He also is De Ligt's agent. Who knows? Maybe there is an important future for Keane at Juve moving forward. But regardless of what happens in the future, very impressive performance there. We also had Parma pretty much with a big win against Genoa. Now they are completely out of the race to avoid relegation. Got the 33 points. Kuchka had the game winner for them. He was a very intriguing acquisition in January. Really helped them solidify the midfield and scored an important goal for them. Now, Alex, your team, Milan, we had now Piontek scored once again. We now have as many goals as Higuain did during his tenure at Milan, and Higuain played more than double the games. Piontek hasn't been getting much service, but when he did get a chance, he buried it. We also had Lucas Biglia, a player that I like a lot, who returned after a 4-month absence and scored on a set piece. He allowed Bakayoko to take a breather. Bakayoko's been arguably Milan's best player for a while, so it's good to have Biglia. It'll be interesting to see how they can play them together, because kind of Gattuso is a little bit reinvented Bakayoko's role. Then we had Bologna, huge win. We were talking in previous weeks how Mihailovic hadn't really been able to turn the corner, but this win against Cagliari was really important. They're still in a spot to be relegated, but they really needed this win. Although Cagliari lost, their goalkeeper Cragno had another amazing performance. I recently ranked the best goalkeepers in Serie A, just performance-wise, and I had Cragno number 3. I felt very good about that pick after watching him there. And then we had Inter playing against Spal. The first half was dreadful. I don't think they had a shot on goal, but in the second half, they scored 2. Winners of the 2 goal scorers, Politano, who's had a very nice season for them, Gagliardini, who had struggled for a little bit, had an important goal, and Lautaro Martinez had a goal disallowed, but was very impressive in this match. I'm about to add Lautaro to one of my favorite lists. I don't have him there quite yet, But the list of strikers that shouldn't be judged on goals alone, because what they do for the team transcends scoring. So think like Dzeko, Mandzukic, Duvan Zapata. I saw some people send me Heskey, Giroud, players like that. Like, I think Lautaro Martinez kind of has that a little bit in him. A very different player than Icardi. I'm not sure if they can play together, but I think they are very different number nines that bring different things to the table. Then we had Atalanta, very impressive win at Genoa. Always hard to beat Sampdoria in their stadium. Quagliarella with the goal. The Lex, as Gazzetta dello Sport reported, 11 of his 17 goals this season have come away from home. And then we had Quagliarella, who converted a penalty, is now the top scorer in Serie A with 20 goals. Really unbelievable. And another unsung hero, Atalanta, Gosens, when a very intriguing wing back, had a goal as well. Then another team that I've been really high on in recent weeks, and this is Torino. Their third win in a row. I had said that if Belotti gets going, because their defense is so good and their midfield is, more than serviceable, I would say above average when you consider how good Mete has been for them, that if Belotti gets going, watch out. And now he has 3 goals in 2 matches. Granted, it was Chievo and Frosinone, but really, really intriguing. I think Torino, definitely a team to watch. And then we had Lazio and Fiorentina playing each other. And I know Piontek is rightfully getting a lot of the headlines, but Muriel's been just as good as a new addition. Muriel, one of my favorite players. I've been wrong a ton of times, but I had a feeling he was going to do great at Fiorentina. But even I wouldn't have expected 8 goals in the new year for them. And we had Immobile, as usual, scoring for Lazio. So we're recording this before Roma plays, so I have a feeling I'm probably going to jinx him, but I'm going to put Ranieri as a winner. I really liked everything about the way he's handled himself at Roma. We talked about on the podcast last week how selfless it was for him. He just said, I'm coming here to help for the rest of the season, didn't ask for any guarantees for next season. I wouldn't be surprised if, even if he does bring him to the Champions League, he steps aside for them to bring in a younger manager to build long term. He really is showing that him saying I'm a diehard Romanista isn't all talk. I also was impressed in his first press conference. You know, he held himself accountable, said I need the help from the fans, and also said some interesting things tactically. He said that Zaniolo has to play in the middle. In recent weeks, Di Francesco had played him on the wing, didn't really work. And very interesting that he plans on playing Schick and Dzeko together, something that Di Francesco was also reticent to do. So I hope I didn't jinx them, because I am rooting for Ranieri, especially from a human aspect, but they'll be playing against Empoli after we record the podcast. So the losers, this is more of a bad luck. Piaka on Fiorentina suffered another ACL tear on Saturday. This is the second one. We wish him the best. Such a young age, really a shame that he had to suffer through that. And on Fiorentina, the draw against Lazio, to me, both Lazio and Fiorentina are losers, because that's the typical draw that doesn't help anyone at all. For Lazio, it maybe takes them out completely out of the mix for a Champions League spot. For Fiorentina, it makes it harder for a Europa League spot. So a draw that felt like a loss for both teams. And in the races to avoid relegation, we had Frosinone. Their home loss against Torino essentially relegates them. There are just so many teams they have to get over and make up a lot of points. Also, Genoa, that was a tough loss against Parma. They're not totally out of the woodwork there. And the last one, and this is really more out of love than anything else, and kind of how Twitter perceives player, I'm going to put Diarra as a loser on Napoli. And look, this is a player that I like a lot, but once again, he got a start under Ancelotti against Sassuolo. I watched that match, was really underwhelming. This has kind of been a constant for him, even last season. I know a lot of people trash Sarri for not playing him often, but this season, every time that I've watched him, except for one game, and it wasn't even a transcendent game, I've been really underwhelmed with him. And, you know, one thing that I don't like is I feel like a lot of times on Twitter, or maybe fans that don't watch teams that often, you kind of put a player in a category and you say, oh, Diarra's great and he's not getting a fair shake. And that becomes the narrative and the storyline around him. When you look, though, Ancelotti's rotated a ton. And when he's given opportunities, I haven't been that impressed. So I hope Diarra turns it around. But I think maybe right now his perception is higher than his performance. And hey, maybe that's good for Napoli, because maybe it would be best for him to go elsewhere and get another opportunity. And if the perception is so high on him, maybe Napoli can get a good return. And one thing that isn't just perception, but is also reality, is the quality of the great Twitter questions that we get from our listeners. As usual, you can send questions on Serie A, transfers, Champions League, music, TV, music, TV, films, using the CalcioLand hashtag. Also, if you have questions on journalism, podcasting, we had my editor from The Athletic, Brooks Peck, on last week. He's more than happy to answer any questions for you guys on articles, how to pitch an article, how to break into the industry, anything at all. Brooks is happy to answer questions, and so am I if you have questions on journalism and podcasting. But which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, first question, and I really apologize to him when I do butcher his last name, but Joseph Baccalieri asks, if Juve don't go through, is it more on management or more on Max Allegri?
So great question, Joseph Baccalieri. Keep them coming. You've been a great supporter of the podcast. So this is a good question. It kind of piggybacks a little bit to our initial discussion, but it's slightly different. So my gut reaction would have been to put it more on Juve's management. But when I look at the first leg, I really think Allegri really, really messed that one up. So I think specifically for the Atletico Madrid, I think I'm going to say Allegri, you know, let's see what happens tomorrow if they do go out. But I will say in general for the Champions League, and Joseph kind of hinted at this in the question, I didn't put the whole thing, that kind of the Ronaldo thing kind of masks that the midfield really isn't up to par. And, you know, I think that's a fair statement. So I'm going to say, though, specifically in the Atletico, if they go out tomorrow, I'm going to put it more on Allegri, because I think this team, as it's constructed, especially because Atletico had a few players out, they should have been able to pass the round. So I'm going to kind of answer it that way.
All right, David, this next question starts off pretty funny, in my opinion. Hate to be a prisoner of the moment, but should Moise Kean get more minutes moving forward or even play a role in the upcoming match against Atletico Madrid?
I love it that prisoner of the moment has become the catchphrase of the podcast. Very proud of that. So I think definitely in Serie A with this lead, I'd like to see more of Keane. Now, the other thing too is Allegri is going to have to figure out, you know, the Ronaldo Dybala thing. I think, you know, if Juve goes out or even if they don't tomorrow, I think that's a really important thing to settle before the end of the season. Also, Mandzukic is about to get an extension. So I think, you know, I definitely want to see more of Keane, but also with the caveat that they need to sort out the Dybala thing. Now, as far against Atletico, maybe it'd be an interesting thing to bring him off the bench, kind of a desperation surprise thing. Maybe Atletico doesn't know that much about him. So it's not the worst idea in the world. Now, I wouldn't start him because Juve does have great offensive weapons, but I could see him playing a small role. But in Serie A, no doubt about it.
All right, David, how about this? Whose chances of qualifying for the Champions League take a bigger hit in the derby between Milan and Inter?
Well, I think the easy answer is Milan. I mean, they have one more point. Inter have a pretty brutal schedule the rest of the way, which, you know, is both good and bad, but I guess ultimately it's actually not that good, because Inter needs to beat the teams that they're competing against, and Milan, this is the last time they'll face them. I think they do play Roma one more time, but when I look at the standings and the momentum, I'm going to say a loss for Inter would be far worse, because look, they did beat Spal, but it wasn't a great performance in the first half. They had lost to Cagliari. The Sicardi thing, although they are getting closer to resolving it, it seems like it's still not there completely. So I'm going to say Inter, also because Milan has been doing so well for a while, and maybe not so much style of play, but the results have been excellent. So yeah, it has to be Inter. I really can't make a case for Milan.
All right, David, fair enough. Next question is a two-parter. Does Napoli have a deep enough squad to go all the way in the Europa League while also holding on to second place? And if Napoli failed to win in Europe and slip in the standings, would De Laurentiis reevaluate his commitment to Ancelotti?
Very good questions. Let's take them one at a time. So just on the surface, does Napoli have a deep enough squad to say they were still in the Scudetto race and in the Europa League? In the midfield, I would say they are a bit short, especially with Hamsik and Raj leaving during the January window. They have quality in the midfield, but maybe not that deep. And then the injury to Albiol, they're a little bit short in the back. So I'm going to answer, actually, they don't. Now, the good news is finishing second, third, or even fourth, that really ultimately doesn't matter much. I mean, Napoli still has, I think, a six-point lead over Milan. I mean, granted, it would take a lot for them to drop, you know, for them to drop out of top four. Yeah, that would be absolutely terrible, and I doubt that happens. But ultimately, if they finish second or third, doesn't really matter. I think Ancelotti is handling this well. They have to go all in for the Europa League. Like, I think they have a great opportunity to win it. I think to their style of play and having Ancelotti gives them a huge edge. So I think Ancelotti is handling it well by giving a priority to the Europa League, and you saw that with the lineup that he trotted out against Sassuolo. Now, if Napoli don't win the Europa League and say they finish third or fourth, I still don't think De Laurentiis would lose his commitment to Ancelotti. I think they're really, they see it as a long-term plan. Ancelotti loves the city, but I think it really would hurt maybe Ancelotti's legacy a little bit. I think, you know, right now compared to under Sarri, they are considerably less points, but obviously they're trying in the Europa League, and that trophy would mean a lot if they do. So I'll say this, though, if they don't win the Europa League and say they finish third, I think Sarri, who said, you know what, I'm leaving Napoli because this team, we took it as far as he could, he would look like he was right on that topic, but I'm still cautiously optimistic on Napoli and the Europa League.
All right. How about this, David? How would you rate James Palotta's time as Roma's owner in light of recent events?
I'm going to quote the listener before who said, I don't want to be a prisoner at the moment, so I don't want to react too much to the recent events. But I think it is safe to say the Monchi hire and whatnot didn't work out. Now, Monchi, you know, came with a lot of hype. I think in a lot of ways, Palotta, when he hired Monchi, someone who's known for discovering talent, selling them for big money, and then starting the cycle all over again, was essentially showing the rest of Serie A, you know, basically his business plan. And he's like, realistically, we can't do more than what we've been doing. Now, Monchi, to me, ended up doing worse than his predecessor, Sabatini, who kind of did the same. I think Sabatini did a considerably better job at Roma. And I think in a lot of ways, Palotta has really put a lot of his chips on the stadium, being able to get it done. And look, it does sound like it's going to happen. Our friend John Solano was on a few weeks ago. He's much more in the weeds with this. He's cautiously optimistic. So I think if he does get the stadium, it's hard not to argue that Palotta's reign at Roma was really good, because we add to that the social media team, which he was behind. Like, he works in the same office as the social media team. We know how much that has raised Roma's profile. That was really thinking forward for Serie A club. Under Palotta's watch, Roma did get to their most points ever in a season. They didn't win the title, but that was also because of Juve's strength. The flip side is you could say, well, Roma maybe didn't fully take advantage of the fact that Milan and Inter have been struggling, and it looks like both clubs have kind of turned the corner. So it's pretty interesting. But I'll say overall, I think Palotta's done a good job. He's put in a lot of his own money. I mean, he really inherited a really debt-stricken team for Roma. You just have to look at their financial statement. This isn't me defending him, because we're both here in Boston. So, you know, without being a prisoner at the moment, the social media, the stadium, the results, the Champions League semifinal, the most points in a season, I would say even without the stadium, I would give him like a B-, C-plus if you wanted to be tough. If he gets the stadium, like, it's hard not to really put him on the high Bs, low As, even without trophies. So, yeah, I get that it's a complicated legacy, and I get all the anger at the players being sold and whatnot. But I think overall, he's done a good job. There's no doubt in my mind that he has.
Okay, this next question is about a very big topic these days. David, what are some of the things you would do to improve VAR?
Yeah, we got a lot of questions. And look, you know, we purposely don't really get into referee decisions on this podcast. And I've said it many times, you'll never change someone's mind on a referee decision. And what seems outrageous or not over a referee decision ultimately really comes down to the team you support. But the VAR is an interesting topic. I see it as slightly different. We've talked about it ad nauseum. We've gotten a lot of questions. So I'm kind of going to combine some of my previous answers. VAR took a step back this season in Serie A. There's no doubt about it. And if you think about it, the main thing is what's being reviewed and what is not. There seems to be no consistency on that. So to solve that, I would give each coach at least one VAR challenge per game. I think that would at least create some transparency where we don't feel that some teams are just never given a chance for a review while other teams get a lot. The other idea, and we've had our friend John Solano again, he had talked about it on his podcast, and other people suggest that not be the referee of the match that reviews the office, that there be a central office at the federation that just handles it. That sounds like a pretty good idea to me. So those are the things I would do, but there's no doubt about it that VAR this season has created more controversy than it solved.
Yeah, and just to give my two cents really quickly on VAR, there's a lot of things that play into it, as you said. The one thing I would just have to drill home to all the officials, but especially the sideline judges, is with the offsides, if you're not sure about it, just don't raise the flag, because then once the goal is scored, you still have the ability to go back to VAR and look at if it was offsides. But once you raise the flag, well, then the play is over. So no matter what happens after, it's moot. And now, David, I mean, I'm going to parallel it to a play in the NFL. In the NFL, there is this thing called forward progress. When a running back or a player is moving forward and then a bunch of players start pushing them backwards, usually the official blows the whistle, calling the play dead. But sometimes the official blows it too early, and then that player fumbles. But if they blow it too early, just like the sideline judge in football raising his flag too early, then something very valid that happens a second later is all of a sudden moot. So I think the officials just need to be a little bit more cautious on raising that offside flag. That is one of the things that's really bothered me this year. All right, so let's move away from football. Last Twitter question comes from Eamon McHale, and he asks, who is the most underrated rock band of our generation? And he adds, mine is Kias.
So I'm humbled that Eamon assumes that we are of the same generation. I have a feeling I'm a little bit older. But yeah, I mean, a lot of my favorite music is from the 90s. So very simply for me, I've said it time and time again, most underrated band of my lifetime is without a doubt the Pixies. They came a little bit too soon, but all the great music from the 90s, the alternative, the last great decade of music, like so much of it can really go back to what the Pixies did. So of my generation, that would be it. Now, of Eamon's generation, I like Kias. I'm not, though, a huge Queen of the Stone Age, that whole group of bands there. That I would say Faith No More and Alice in Chains, as I've said multiple times, and for different reasons. Like Faith No More, I think there are three albums in the 90s. It's hard for any band to have three records as good as those. Alice in Chains, their discography in the 90s, very close to that. But the bonus for them is I can't think of a band that rebounded so well from their lead singer dying young. And Layne Staley was an unbelievable singer, really such a huge part of their sound. But Alice in Chains still put out really good records now. They found a singer who sounds a little bit like Layne, but does bring a different thing to the equation. So to me, they're underrated also because they kept it going. I know some people have said, hey, you know, they shouldn't call it Alice in Chains without Layne, but I always felt it was Jerry Cantrell's band anyway. And I think what they've done is still in line with what the band was. So those are my picks. So now let's get back to Juve and Calcio. We're going to have Elio Salerno take a deep dive on the team. Now, I will say, as we were recording, Alex, let me know that there's a lot of news on Zidane potentially returning to Real Madrid sooner rather than later. So we'll discuss this on Thursday. I know this has a lot of implication on Juve, a lot of implication on Hazard. So we're going to give time for Alex to gather his thoughts on that. So if that goes through, we'll talk about it on Thursday. I just wanted to let you know why we didn't discuss it today. So we're going to close on Juve. Again, thank you to everyone who sent questions. Thanks for your support. Please keep those reviews on iTunes going. They really go a long way toward helping us grow. It only takes 5 seconds to leave us 5 stars. If you want to leave a comment, we read them all. And I know there's nothing better than others reading what listeners have to say to entice them to listen to the podcast. So thanks so much for your support, and we'll chat with you on Thursday. So for the interview part of the podcast, it made a lot of sense to go to Juve. We haven't covered them in a little while, and they have a huge match coming up against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Definitely, so far, their most important game of the year. So you guys know by now, usually with Juve, we are blessed either with our great friend Adam Digby or Maurizio from Around J. But in recent weeks, I've been trying to find some new guests for Calcioland and also trying to find some new up-and-coming writers. I've been very fortunate to have people help me out when I was getting started. So I wanted to return the favor. And when I asked my followers who I should give a spotlight on, one name that came over and over again is Elio Salerno, who is based in the UK, has a great British accent, but is a calcio connoisseur. He's been writing for Football Italia, covering Juve pretty frequently, and I've been very impressed with his work. So, Elia, it's a real pleasure to welcome you to Calcioland. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, David. Thank you very much for having me on the pod. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Terrific. So let's start with this. Let's start more big picture, then we'll talk about the game, and then I have a few more questions on Juve in general. So I've been asking our guests that come on to talk about the teams that they cover, you know, with about a third of the season left, what grade they would give their team. But for you, I'm going to add a caveat. I'd like a grade for Juve so far, but also I'd like to know how much your grade would change, if at all, based on what happens against Atletico. We know the Champions League has become an obsession for a lot of Juve fans. It's understandable between the streak in Serie A and Ronaldo arriving. So simply put, what grade do you give Juve and how much would it change based on the Atletico match?
I would definitely grade Juve's season so far around a C. I think the Serie A title is always important, no matter how many times Juve have won it and they're dominant in the league. Despite people perhaps trying to dismiss the Scudetto, it's fundamental for Juve to win it, and it's always important for the club. I think in terms of progression against Atletico, I'm not sure it really affects the grade. I think, as you mentioned, the Champions League has become something of an obsession for the fans and the club. So reaching the quarterfinal would perhaps be a minimum requirement for this Juve now. So I'm not sure the grade would change until the later stages, if they get there. And especially when you think about the exit in the Coppa Italia, that was very disappointing too. So, yeah, we'll have to see if they can improve on that.
Okay, so now let's talk about the game specifically. And look, they could have lost by a bigger margin, but when I look at the first leg, I think it really couldn't have gone much worse for Juve than it did. No away goals, lose by 2. We know Atletico, how good they are defensively. I mean, it feels the return leg is really in their wheelhouse with how it went. But Juve is Juve. They still have a ton of talent. So let me ask you, how much of a chance do you give them and the return leg to make a comeback?
I'm sure Juve will win the game because they have to. And we've seen before that when they're backed against the wall, they come out fighting. And I'm sure they'll get the result. But I don't think that the progression will happen for Juve. As you mentioned, playing Atletico is tough. But when you're playing Atletico and they've got something to defend, then it's just made doubly hard. And I think they will make it as difficult as possible in terms of trying to kill the flow of the game. We know how Simeone can deploy certain tactics to disrupt teams. And, you know, it's all fair and it's all part of the game and it's to be expected. So I think if Juve can perhaps limit Atleti's counterattacks and reduce their chances to a minimum because of the the weakness that Juve have showed defensively, I think it really rests on that, because I'm sure they will win the game, but it just depends if they can limit Atleti in terms of counter-attacks and perhaps try and take it to extra time, because scoring 2-3 goals, it's extremely tough against this team.
Well said. So now let's talk about Ronaldo specifically. Obviously, his arrival raised the expectations in the Champions League. And today, because I'm prepping for an article, I asked our followers, you know, who has more at stake in this match? Is it Juve? Is it Allegri? Is it even Ronaldo? So I want to ask you, you know, how would you evaluate his season so far in general? He's been very good in Serie A and the Champions League. You know, I'll let you say how you think he's done. And I want to ask you, too, if you think it's fair that his acquisition is, for the most part, and I would say almost exclusively, rated based on how he and Juventus does in the Champions League.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I think in isolation, individually, he's been really quite good in terms of goals and assists and what he's brought to the team in terms of all-round play. But people will say, you buy Ronaldo, you have to win the Champions League. And I think when Juve have smashed their transfer record, smashed their wage structure for him, it's only normal that the response will be Juve have failed if they don't win the Champions League. And it's really hard to argue against that. Perhaps if they do reach the semi-final or the final, then there perhaps is a case to say, well, we got there and Ronaldo didn't quite make the difference that people thought he could, but then there's another chance to do it next season. So yeah, I don't think you can argue with people that will say Juve have failed, because when you have Ronaldo, he is arguably the greatest player the Champions League has ever seen. So, and you buy him for that reason. So that there can be no hiding place at the end of the season if that's not the case.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I definitely think, too, there was also a commercial aspect, marketing aspect has been very successful there. But when it comes to the pitch and the results there, I think it's completely fair that he be looked that way. I mean, in a lot of ways, I felt that way, too, a little bit about Higuain because of the expense. But with Ronaldo, that's even more and more apparent. Because as you mentioned, he has an amazing track record. And like, as you put it, that you can make a case he's been the best player in Champions League history. So now let's move to another controversial figure in Juve. And this is manager Allegri. You've written a lot about him. I've written a lot about him as well. So, you know, if you read Juve Twitter, you would really have an impression of Allegri. It's very interesting to me that non-Serie A fans, Premier League fans, or even fans of other leagues hold him in really high regard. That doesn't seem to be the case at Juve, and to a certain extent, other Serie A fans. So let me ask you, do you think this really heavy criticism of Allegri is warranted or not, in your opinion?
I don't think the really heavy criticism of him is warranted at all. I think people have tried to create an agenda against him purposely because they don't like the way the team is playing. And they're using it as a reason against him, and they're using it as a reason to dislike him. And it doesn't seem like it's about the football anymore. It just seems a little bit like it's the agenda against Allegri. And it doesn't matter what the team do or what he does, Allegri is a problem. And I don't think it's fair in that sense, because after everything he's achieved with the club, he deserves more respect than that. And it needs to be, the argument needs to be a little bit more balanced. I personally feel that perhaps his time has come to an end. He seems to have hit a little bit of a brick wall with the team and vice versa. So I think in that case, you need to have a balanced view of, yes, perhaps it is time for him to go, but that doesn't mean he is a poor coach. He hasn't turned into a poor coach at all. It's just sometimes things come to an end. And there needs to be a new cycle. And I think that's what the case is. And it's a shame to see all these people that are constantly bashing Allegri. I don't find it fair at all.
Yeah, I think we're completely on the same page here. And I did see in one of your recent articles, and I've mentioned this a lot of times, you know, you look at when Allegri arrived, I think, you know, as you mentioned, and I did as well, you know, he had rocks thrown at his car. I think most people thought the sky was falling when Conte left. And I mean this even in Serie A. I think had you told any Juve fan on the day he arrived that this would have been Allegri's track record, I think they would have been shocked and they wouldn't have believed it. And they would have said that would be a huge success. So I think in a way, he's kind of a victim of his own success. Like, he's raised the bar, and I know Juve invested a lot, but that was also because of their runs in the Champions League that, you know, got him more financing. So he was definitely part of that. And I'm with you too as well that this really might be the time for both parties to maybe make a change. I mean, in Serie A especially, it's rare for a manager to be there this long. So we're in agreement there. So I want to ask you about a few players. And let's start with Pjanic and Dybala. For different reasons, I think they've had, I mean, I'll let you say how you rate their seasons, but they are two players that really interest me. So tell me how you evaluate their season, and you can start with whichever one of the two you prefer.
I think for both of them, you would probably say they've been underwhelming. Dybala more so than Pjanic. I think there's huge expectation on both of them, and especially with Pjanic, the responsibility he has in midfield is huge to the team and the way Allegri likes to play. And I do feel a little bit sorry for Pjanic in that sense. Sometimes he seems a little bit isolated in midfield. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, when he's surrounded by players like Cancelo and Bentancourt, that his game improves and the team's game improves. I think once you surround him with better technicians, he takes his game to another level, and his impact in the team is much better. So I do feel for him in that sense, but, you know, on occasions like last week against Napoli, he doesn't help himself, and perhaps he feels the weight of the responsibility. In terms of Dybala, it's a really strange one. He has all the tools to be a key man for the team, but he almost seems to me like he's accepted that now Ronaldo's there, he is not the team's top man anymore. And I can't really understand the role that Allegri is giving him now, and the way he just seems happy to be involved, and he would drop deep and get involved in the possession, but he's never at the business end anymore. And I understand that with Mandzukic and Ronaldo, they perhaps occupy more of the spaces towards the goal where Dybala wants to be. But I just don't see that fire in him that makes him feel like, I want to step up. I still want to be with Ronaldo. I still want to be there with Mandzukic, getting the goals, getting assists, being the key player in the team. I just feel he's happy to play. And I don't think that's good enough for someone like Dybala.
Well said. You know, I'm not the biggest Pjanic guy, and I have to say, in my opinion, with Ronaldo arriving, the fact that he's not taking free kicks as much, to me, really decreases his value. Although we saw with Napoli what happens when he does, and I'm a huge Dybala fan as far as talent, but I think in a way I'm with you, it's more frustrating. Because he's starting to be at an age where he is starting to hit his prime, and I think more should be expected of him. So I'm very curious to see how it's going to play out in the future. But let's talk about Juve's current midfield before we get to the new addition for next season. So while I'm not the biggest Pjanic guy, I will concede he is probably the best one on the squad. But tell me about which other midfielder on Juve do you trust the most, assuming Pjanic is the one that you trust the most.
I'd have to say at this moment, it would be Blaise Matuidi. I think in terms of what he offers the team every week, the consistency he brings, and yes, he isn't the most pretty player. He isn't the technically the greatest player, but you know his job and you know the energy he's going to bring and the work rate he's going to bring. And I think in terms of that, you can always trust him. You can always trust him to do his job, whether the team is playing well, whether the team is playing poorly. Matuidi will always be Matuidi. And I think from that point of view, you have to say he is the midfield player you would trust most, because Khedira, a lot's been said about him. Emre Can, indifferent, and Bentancur is still young, and you know he seems to be coming up for a few games and dropping off for a few games. So it has to be Matuidi, and he is an enjoyable player to watch, and I think he is one that the fans appreciate in that sense too.
Yeah, I think Matuidi is a good answer. You know, it's interesting. I would say PSG definitely misses him as well. I think that says something about him. So you also mentioned Emre Can, and Juve is getting another midfielder from the Premier League on a Bosman signing, and this is Aaron Ramsey. So let me ask you, I don't know how familiar you are with him as a player. I'm not that much, so I'm curious to get your take, if you think in and of itself he's enough of an upgrade to elevate Juve's midfield, which I think everyone would agree is their weak area. Do you think they should bring someone else in as well? And in general, how do you think he'll fit into Juve and what will he bring?
I'm pleased with the signing of Ramsey. He's certainly something that Juve missed from their midfield. He adds a different dimension to it in that sense with the attributes he's got. He is a player that he has energy and he can work across the pitch, but it's the intelligence that he brings in the final third in terms of assists and goals, but linking the game as well to help add the fluidity that perhaps is missing from Juve's midfield at times. So it's definitely a move in the right direction because they need players of that kind in midfield. I'm not sure he is the answer. But I do think they need another alongside the signing of Ramsey. For me personally, and I know you're a big fan yourself, it would be Milinkovic-Savic. For a couple of years, I've hoped that Juve would sign him. I just think his ceiling as a player is higher than Ramsey's, and he would be the ideal man to complete the midfield and bring that balance that they need, because I think Paul Pogba is impossible now.
Yeah, I think once Mourinho left Man United, whatever chance there was, that ship sailed. But I'm with you. You basically guaranteed you're coming back on the podcast by talking about Milinkovic-Savic. So let's end on this. One of the themes of Calcioland is we like to talk about writing. A lot of our listeners are, you know, produce content, some write, some have podcasts, YouTube channels, and whatnot. And as I mentioned, the reason you and I are chatting is I'm trying to get more up and comers, and your name came up a lot. So obviously from our listeners. So obviously you're doing something right. So tell me a little bit what you've learned since you started writing for Football Italia, and maybe what tip, you know, you'd like to give yourself if you could travel back in time when you started, or to anyone listening who is trying to break into this field.
I think I've really learned to appreciate those people that are the professionals at their job. It really is a great skill to be able to write in detail about football, and the way you portray the subject that you're talking about, it is a skill, and I think I found a new appreciation for those people that do it full time, and it's something that I personally really enjoy doing. I think if I could probably give myself a tip, I would say perhaps start doing it 10 years ago when I was a little bit younger, but I feel fortunate that I have the opportunity to give my opinions out on a platform like Football Italia, which is greatly followed, because I know there's lots of people who would like to do that. So for me, it's just something that I will carry on doing. And for anyone that wants to do it, once you start, you'll be surprised how quickly you can improve just by regularly writing and putting ideas out there. And if you're brave with it, you can take it a long way.
I completely agree. Practice makes perfect. That's the most important thing. I try, like even if I'm on vacation, just to always find some time to write a little bit, because that really is what makes it a lot easier. So, Elio, it was a real pleasure to chat with you. You know, I definitely, after reading your articles, I could see why people recommended you. And I also really enjoyed chatting with you. So this is arrivederci. I'm sure we'll talk again about Juve and other topics in Serie A. So thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.